I'm bringing Hassel back.
Get your sexy on.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Tuesday at noon. He's presented by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, the liquor store redefined. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason, Willie Donick with you here on Chase Willie D. Mace. We're at Bridgestone Arena today. We say hello to Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. Benny from the Bronx is not coming this week. I mean, I figured he would be, you know. Three-game losing streak.
Well, I haven't even asked the first question yet. I mean, look, okay, fine. You want Benny from the Bronx? D-May said maybe, and I'm using his exact words, maybe Mike Vrabel has reached his ceiling as the head coach of the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, wow.
That's so Benny from the Bronx.
Things have turned.
Hey, that's what happens. That's what happens when your owner fires the GM in the middle of the middle of the season. A good GM, then we're up to – everything's up to – everything else is up to interpretation now. You know?
Look, it's hard to argue that. And, you know, as you sit here and look at, you know, a 7-6 team, obviously the division is what it is, but – and then you just look at the remaining schedule. Like, look, I, for one, after Philadelphia – thought, you know what, like, Jacksonville's been struggling, the Chargers, you know, this is prior to their game, you know, on Sunday night, the Chargers, you know, have not been great. Hey, it's the Houston Texans. Okay, Dallas, a good football team. And then with Jacksonville, I mean, you're talking about probably, look, four of the last five games, you could say, look, I mean, maybe the Titans will be favored in these games. And you know, now you look at it and you say, like, I don't know. Like, which game are you like, hey, I'm for sure they're going to win? And you'd say maybe Houston. But other than that, you can't find one. And so that's scary. That's a scary spot to be in when, you know, the expectations were what they were. So I get it. I totally get it.
Tim, when you watched that game on Sunday, do you think that that team was distracted by everything that had gone on in the week?
I, you know, it's hard to say, like, you know, to truly quantify that, Chase. I think because I think there are elements of what happened. Like, hey, Derrick Henry runs the ball well. Like, and so, like, were they, you know, were people involved in the run game distracted? You know, I don't want to say, I guess it would be hard to say, like, hey, this is the reason that this was a problem. Do I think that when things like that happen, it is shocking, and it definitely grabs everyone's attention, and people talk about it all week. And, you know, even though when they talk to the media, they say, hey, we're focusing on playing football. And that, like, do I think that it was a distraction from the standpoint of it took people's attention? Like, I 100% believe it took people's attention, like, because it always does. And, you know, can you, you know, connect the dot directly and say it affected performance? Look, I'm not positive you can do that, but Chase, there's no way that it wasn't a distraction of some sort.
Yeah, I agree. It totally had to be. So with this team, and in all seriousness, with Vrabel, because I made the argument that even though I wouldn't have fired the GM in the middle of the season, I think it's well documented the misses that John Robinson has had when it comes to drafting and free agency, the Julio Jones trade, those things, well documented. So in Vrabel's defense, I would say that has he truly ever had a Super Bowl or let's even go playoff run caliber roster in his tenure here? I'm going to say no, he hasn't. How would you answer that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can say that because you could probably look at other rosters and say, like, okay, that roster, especially with maybe some of the contracts, you know, was set up a certain way. But, like, what if we were to look at, you know, other teams that had maybe, I don't know, like look back to, like, when Atlanta made it to the Super Bowl. Was that roster, like, so absurd that, you know, like, that Dan Quinn, you know, had everything at his disposal? I think there are sometimes, like, I don't know. I think sometimes
no, but
we
they had
do
they
roster.
Had the quarterback. That they had a a franchise quarterback, and say what you want about Matt Ryan now, Matt Ryan then, I mean, he was the MVP. He was a franchise quarterback. That's the difference.
Yeah, no, listen, but Jared Goff had been to a Super Bowl, or Jimmy Garoppolo was in a Super Bowl. I mean, I do think that, I guess if we're going to go right to the quarterback, Ryan Tannehill's good enough to win a Super Bowl. I guess we would start there. So, if we have that conversation, he's good enough to win a Super Bowl. So, look, as a general manager, he took care of that, right? And, look, he partly took care of that because at one point Marcus Mariota was a starting quarterback. They needed to protect themselves at the position because how it was going. And truthfully, they uncovered a starting quarterback that the rest of the league – wasn't viewing as a starting quarterback. That's good work from the front office from my perspective. And I think that there are other players that have been there that have been drafted or been signed in free agency that have been really good. So here's what I think on this. I guess I would just say it this way. I don't think John Robinson should have been fired in the middle of the season. Now, maybe if I knew something about if I knew something different about the A.J. Brown trade and how that went down, or Isaiah Wilson and how that went down, where, there was maybe somebody saying, look, Isaiah Wilson, I'm not sure. I don't feel good about it. And he was like, no way, we're drafting him. Everything I've seen checks out. If that was that conversation, all right, maybe I feel differently. Or if on the A.J. Brown front, it was, look, Mike Vrabel is saying, we're crazy. Let's give him the Stephon Diggs deal, plus money. Let's give him that contract. And John Robinson was like, no, not with this receiver draft class. There are three players that are just like him. Let's go ahead and move him. Let's get somebody just like him on a rookie deal. If that's the conversation, then fine. But, if that wasn't the conversation, and I have to be honest with you, I don't believe that in either of those scenarios that was the conversation, then no, I don't think he should have been fired based on how this roster is constructed. And, look, part of it is this is how it goes. When there is a power struggle like this, and, now basically all of the power ends up, back in the favor of Mike Vrabel, now there aren't any excuses about players that you draft, the development of players, and all of that. So, look, I think they're kind of in a bad spot with how this all went down.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. And with that being said, Tim, do you believe now because of it? And listen, we are left to assume, or we are left to sort of, go in our own directions as far as what we think is next for this organization. And we're able to do that because of what the owner chose to do with her GM. And she has every right to do what she needs to do. But with that being said, do you believe now, even with what we may think of Vrabel, and he may have a little bit more power or whatnot, do you think now he's on the clock? Because you fire your GM, typically you fire your coach, then your GM. But you fire your GM, and now the head coach is sitting there. What is he to think? I would almost want to think that he realizes that, listen, if we don't get this thing right, I'm next.
Yeah, here's what I would say. I don't think there's any doubt that now all of a sudden at least the attention is on him. I don't think he's anywhere close to being in trouble, in terms of job security. I really don't. I mean, he's essentially a year removed from, nearly everybody thinking he did as good a job coaching that football team last year as anyone would have done. I think that, I don't think that the fall from grace ends up happening that quickly. Now, I think if you were to go to, now let's fast forward 1 year, right? And then we say, okay, look at some of the things that maybe transpire in the off season. And then probably to some degree of what happens at the end of this season. Then I think all of a sudden, okay, now there's a tension, at the position, but excuse me, I don't think he's anywhere close to being, let's use the term hot seat. Seems like what everyone wants to use. I don't think he's anywhere near a hot seat.
And Tim, you may be right on that one. You know, my thing was just maybe, you know, he has reached his ceiling because, you know, we always, you know, when talking about head coaches and quarterbacks, I think head coaches and quarterbacks are in two completely categories from everybody else, because you can have a Dan Marino who does great during the regular season. He puts up all these numbers, but he only went to one Super Bowl. So we never put Dan Marino in the class with Brady, Montana, those guys. We consider him, you know, we consider him a great quarterback, but he's not the elites or the GOATs. I think it's the same way with head coaches. You can be considered a really good head coach.
Hey, to your point, teammates, uh-huh. Think of how people talked about Andy Reid.
Exactly,
right?
Like, absolutely.
Don't want to give Andy Reid any love. And then all of a sudden he wins the Super Bowl, and like, listen, Andy Reid's going to end up in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if Andy Reid didn't win a Super Bowl, is there going to be all these people that are like, I don't know. I'm going to tell you right now, them winning that Super Bowl, like, he's not any more of a coach because he ended up winning that Super Bowl. So like, I do think like there's an element of it. If I just look at Mike Vrabel, I think he's done a very good job. I think he's a very good coach. I think the big thing for me is this. Like, the only way I can understand a GM getting a contract through 2027 and then getting fired halfway through the year, the only thing I can kind of figure out logistically on how that can happen is two of the biggest issues, which would be Isaiah Wilson and A.J. Brown, is how those decisions went down. Like, that's the only way it makes any sense. And you know, look, I don't know that we'll ever get the real answer on it, but like, guys, it doesn't make sense any other way.
Mm-hmm. He's Tim
right. Like, every GM misses on somebody.
No, you're right.
You know, it happens. So, like, listen, I mean, look at Baltimore. That's another organization you're super familiar with, D-Mace.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone loves the front office in Baltimore. From Ozzie on, it's been great. Like, well-respected. When personnel jobs are open, people want to go after people in the personnel department in Baltimore. That's a good head coach, okay? Like, look at how poorly they've done drafting receivers.
Yeah, you are absolutely right about that.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us. He's presented by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. We'll have more with Tim up next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you. Tim Hasselbeck, presented by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, the liquor store redefined.
Now, Tim, let's go to the conference in general, the AFC. Obviously, the Titans got the Chargers coming up. They got a big win last week. They keep themselves in a playoff hunt. And ironically, they have the same exact record than the Tennessee Titans. And we thought 3 or 4 weeks ago that this Charger team was pretty much done. And we were surprised by how awful they were playing at times. But looking at these, you know, 3 or 4 teams that are sort of fighting for playoff position, which team do you least like heading into potentially the playoffs at the end of the season? You got about 4 or 5 teams fighting for that last spot.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? My answer would be, you know, the bottom of the AFC East would be the answer. So whatever, you know, Jets, Patriots, that would be the team that I, you know, like the least. But look, here's what I'd say. I think that Sunday night game, like, the magnitude of that game, I think, can't be overstated. Because, look, if Miami wins that football game on Sunday night, you know, they then end up at 9-4, okay? So they're in a really good spot, you know, and, I mean, I guess the division's not out of reach for them, but they're in a good spot. And then what that would have done to the Chargers would have had them at 6-7, which – you know, now all of a sudden, like, obviously with Cincinnati at 9-4 and not a super easy schedule, teams like, you know, the Jets or New England, Miami, for example, in front of it, like, that to me would have been debilitating. So I think the magnitude of that game was huge because the Chargers, with Herbert played about as well as any quarterback has played in a game all year in that game the other night. His two receivers are back, you know, healthy. He clearly looks like he's, you know, getting better from the rib injury. And so now at 7-6, like, they look like a super dangerous team. Let's say we're going to have two teams from the north, you know, both Baltimore and Cincinnati. And then you look at, you know, is it Buffalo and Miami? Like I just, and then whatever happens to the bottom there, and, you know, Mike White's hurt, and, you know, New England is maybe the most boring team to watch in football. So, like, I just, that's how I kind of see the bottom of the AFC.
Do you think Buffalo can hold on to their lead? They, you know, them as well as the Kansas City Chiefs, with their four or five games remaining, it seemed like Kansas City has the easier road to get in the number one seed, but do you think Buffalo can hold on to it?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think about Buffalo, and I just want to see balance from them. I look at Buffalo's, you look at Buffalo's finish. I mean, just, you know, start counting the games. I mean, here we go. We got Dolphins, Bears, Bengals, Patriots. Like, you're probably getting the Dolphins at the right time. The Bengals, I think, are going to be like that. That's, you know, that's a hard out at any point. And so I think we're sitting here at a toss up at this point because of that. And then, when you look at Kansas City, like, I love that. I mean, you guys have heard me enough to know, like, I love the way Andy Reid coaches, and you look at their stretch. I mean, tell me which game they lose. Texans, Seahawks, Broncos, Raiders. Like, to me, I think Kansas City runs the table, and if that's the case and Cincinnati's able to beat Buffalo, then look, that obviously, you know, changes the path to the Super Bowl in the AFC.
Yeah, you might be right. I was thinking about that yesterday. I'm looking at Buffalo and I'm looking at Kansas City. I'm like, man, can Buffalo hold on to the number one seed? But then, you know, if Lamar is healthy, then you think maybe Baltimore can sneak in there. But because he's not healthy, I think they're going to barely hold on to their own division, let alone be a number one seed in the AFC.
It's what's crazy. Right? Like, when you look at this, and I feel like this is exactly what happens. You get to, you know, kind of that first week of December, you play that game, and then you go, now what it boils down to is, like, and some of these games feel like they were so long ago, but don't you now start looking at these last four games? Like, you just start, you're like, all right, like, okay, I know what I see, but let me look at their schedule. You know, like, hey, I get it. Like, let me look at their schedule. I got one for you in the NFC. Look at the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
Like, Detroit, Rock,
I mean,
City.
And here's the thing about Detroit. Like, Detroit's got like five games where they've lost, where they're one score games. Detroit's finish, Jets with the quarterback situation the way it is, Carolina Panthers, Chicago Bears, and then Green Bay Packers week 8. And, you know, at that point, like, Green Bay might be way out of it. That could be a Jordan Love game. Like, think about if they win four games. Now, this is a 6-7 team. That could be a 10-win team. So, yeah, I think at this point, like, for as much as we want to look at, like, what teams look like and all of that, who you play, meaning the team, and then also the quarterback that you're going to face in these last four games, I think, you know, say as much about your season as anything that's happened to this point.
But and you're absolutely right, and that's why I'm going back to the Titans. Looking at the teams that they play, only one of those quarterbacks, well, two, scares you. But you don't know if they can even beat Houston because of the way he played against Dallas. If that Houston team shows up, then it's going to be bad for the Titans or Jacksonville at the end of the season. You've given Jacksonville confidence now.
Hey, how many quarterbacks are you afraid to play for the Titans? Two, or is it three? Because I think
it could be
three.
Yeah,
you
know? Trevor Lawrence.
Like,
yes.
Right. I mean, listen. Look, and that's what I mean about facing quarterbacks. Like, look. Here's the thing: Herbert, Prescott, Trevor Lawrence, who's clearly an ascending player. They're getting better there. That's a bad finish. When you look at the quarterbacks you face in the last four games of your season, Like, and three of them are guys that, you know, are playing well, you know, at that point of the year. It's a bad recipe. It's a really bad recipe. Now, the division, obviously, is you know, been such a disaster. But, look, we could have a scenario. It's crazy to say it. Like, we could have a scenario where that Jacksonville game, Week 18, means a lot.
Oh, I think we could definitely have that scenario where it means that. Hey, real quick, what's your take on what's happening in Atlanta? Going to Desmond Ritter, Marcus Mariota says that he needs to go have a knee scope or something, a chronic knee injury taken care of. And what I've read that Arthur Smith said was it hadn't bothered him all year, but that's his prerogative. They end up signing Logan Woodside off the Titans practice squad to be the backup to Ritter. But kind of an interesting situation there.
Yeah, that to me, you know, I think, and maybe you're alluding to this, Chase, sometimes these things seem like they're strictly, hey, performance or injury related, and then other times it feels like, ooh, like that felt pretty cold, like maybe there's, you know, it feels a little personal. Reading, you know, Arthur Smith's comments about Mariota's play and then the stuff that you're referencing,
yeah,
seems like it really isn't all about that, and there's maybe just general unhappiness all the way around. And look, that happens. I mean, it's like, you know, a lot of times people don't see things eye to eye when that happens. You know, then you listen. It wouldn't be the first time that a player all of a sudden. And I'm not saying this is a Mariota's case, but like, it's why you see guys that like, yep, I got a hamstring injury. Can't go, you know, and it's like, wait, how did this just happen? And it just kind of has that feel to it, which I have to say is surprising.
Oh, yeah. With Marcus, it's very surprising. So we'll see how that shakes out. Hey, look, I hope Benny from the Bronx wasn't too bad today, but I appreciate it as always.
You guys were pretty good, man. Yeah, you guys were good. You guys,
yeah,
we've had
a spirited
cheer.
Yeah, holiday cheer and a spirited discussion. For sure. But
hey, did the driver show up to take you to Walgreens the other day?
No, listen, I don't have the driver. That's just for you. Listen,
no, that's for Matthew.
All time.
Matthew has the driver.
I sent him over Hasselbeck's house, but I didn't specify which house. But I just thought I assumed he knew it would be your house, so he might have went to your brother's house.
Hey,
I don't know.
Hey, speaking of Matthew, did he and Brewski make up?
You know, I didn't see this, but I heard they got into it a little bit.
They did. They had a little spat.
Because Matthew keeps it real, man. That's why. Matthew keeps it real. Everybody else want to sugarfoot around everything, man. Goodness.
So did Matthew say that Dak was good? Is that the thing? I think Dak had a pretty good game. Did he win that one?
Who, Dak?
Was it over Dak Prescott?
No, it was over players and, you know, maybe – fibbing injuries to get the timeout. That he kind of referenced the Patriots used to do that, and Brewski didn't like that.
Oh,
yeah, there you go.
That's a dangerous place to go.
It was.
Dangerous place to go.
It was. Teddy didn't like that.
Hey, but your brother, he the type that he goes
hey,
those places, man. He's not scared. He's not scared.
I ain't scared.
Hey, yeah, well, listen, I love Teddy. I'm pretty sure New England was very liberal with some of the things they were doing.
No doubt. Tim, thanks as always. We'll do it again next week.
See you, fellas.
Yep.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Tuesday at noon, and he's presented by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, the liquor store. Redefined. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Hey, Matthew's the type of guy when they were little, he'd just walk in the house. Tim, come with me.
Yeah.
Like, where are we going? We're going to fight. Like, man, why?
He don't give a
exactly.
Hey, can you make your parlays pop this holiday season? Win some money from Vegas with weekly parlay bonuses from my friends at Superbook Sports. If you place a 3-team football parlay, Superbook will give you a $10 bonus voucher. It's your holiday bonus, courtesy of Superbook Sports. You can rack up the wins and earn some holiday cash by betting parlays with Superbook. Just download the Superbook Tennessee app and place your parlays today. You got San Francisco and Seattle on Thursday night. San Francisco minus three. Maybe you throw that in there. The Vikings minus four. They just lost to the Lions. They're taking on the Colts. You could look at that one. Baltimore, Cleveland. Cleveland, a three-point favorite at home. A lot of options on the Superbook Sports app. Just place those parlays today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Back here at Chase Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. We're live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Oilers coming up later on tonight. Max Herz will have pregame for you starting at 6. Did we learn anything from our trip downstairs, Willie, that you could share? I should say. Maybe I should have asked you that off air.
Yeah.
Well, it's what you would think, right? They liked a lot of what they did last night in the game. They got the goaltending they needed. They defended, in my opinion, the best that they had all year long, even without a couple of key defensemen in the game. That wasn't the problem. But it's no secret. They've got to find ways to get more offense. And, you know, what do the players need to do? And you know, what do you need to do with your game planning? You know, with the line combinations, with your coaching, you know, everybody is looking themselves in the mirror down there and saying, you know, how do we fix this? We know we can do better, and if we do, we can be successful. There's a lot of things that you're doing well on the ice. Now, tonight is a totally different animal. Now, St. Louis, if you look back to last year, and even at times this year, they have explosive weapons on offense. St. Louis, to shut down St. Louis, no goals in regulation, mm-hmm. that's not easy to do. They've got great players, and they did it last night. Tonight, obviously, you've got Pippen and Jordan, right, as I like to call them. You got Pippen and Jordan. Now, the rest of their team is a very, very average team,
right.
to put it kindly. They don't have a ton of weapons beyond the two guys, but those two guys make everybody better.
They don't have Bill Winnington and
and B.J. Armstrong,
Wilbur Duong, Steve Kerr, yeah.
Craig Hodges,
uh-huh. Craig Hodges,
B.J. Armstrong. Yeah, I mean they've got
Bill Winnington.
Yeah. They've got the Luke Longley.
By the way, I did enjoy the entrance. Did live up when I was there Saturday night. It did live up.
Okay, good.
It was good, especially I got very excited. And the man in the middle.
So to be able to duplicate that defensive effort will not be easy. Now, Minnesota held them to one last night.
Mm-hmm.
They also gave up five. There was a home-and-home, Minnesota and Edmonton. Edmonton won the first one 5-2. And in the return trip, Minnesota beat them 2-1. So they figured some things out defensively. But if you don't have your act together, you're going to get destroyed by those two guys, right? Especially if you take silly penalties, and you touched on it earlier in the show, Derek. Ryan Johansson took three penalties last night, and they lived to tell about it. Their penalty kill stepped up. Now, you talk about a recipe for disaster, taking unnecessary penalties against the Oilers. That's just taking a big fire and pouring a big gasoline can on it. What's going to happen? You know what's going to happen if you do that. So that's a big emphasis. The other emphasis, of course, is another way you pour gasoline on the fire is if you have turnovers. They're so good at going. Think about the Showtime Lakers, mm-hmm. right? How quick were they going from one end of the court to the other? The quick outlet, Magic Johnson, Cooper, Worthy, they're flying down the ice. McDavid and Draisaitl are the best, and in particular McDavid. If you steal a puck anywhere on the ice mm-hmm. and you get it to him, boom, he's end-to-end faster than anybody in the league. And more dangerous than anybody in the league. So you can't have those unnecessary turnovers. The decisions with the puck tonight will be everything. And it's better to say, look, if I've got it, if it's there, we take it. If it's not there, play the puck deep. Let's go, and we'll forecheck. We'll get it back. But make them go 200 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you put them in a position where they have to defend, now they become a very average team that you can exploit. They don't have great goaltending. They don't have great defensive play overall. And so that's where they can be beat. Their record is 16-13. It's not like they're a dominant team. But they can dominate if you allow them to.
If you
let them to. Yes.
So I want to ask you this, and I you know, we had Scott Nichol today. David's at some meetings, so that's why he couldn't join us. But I would ask him this question too. You look at this team right now, this Predators team, and I would say, if I'm being completely honest, I think they're okay. I don't think they're great. And we keep talking about there's another level that they have to get to. Do I think they could get there? Yeah, probably. It, maybe at some point. Still a long way to go. But they got to get there sooner rather than later. There's no secondary scoring right now. That's been the biggest problem. It's not so much the Duchesnes and the Forsbergs. Yes, you want more out of them. But you're getting nothing from the bottom six. No.
I would flip-flop it. I think the first priority is to get the top guys going.
Sure.
Because
but
that
you
makes
still,
the other plays better. But I agree with you. The next thing is the secondary
it's,
guys
it's a trickle-down
need to,
effect, but you yes. still need to get some of that. So at what point, and you have all these young players that you really like, and Scott Nichol was talking about them, that you feel good about them, and they've added a little bit of energy, but it hasn't been quite what you're looking for yet. At what point do you start thinking – do I need to start making some phone calls and seeing what's around the league, or are they kind of at a situation where they have to stick with what they got and see it through?
I mean, everybody's making phone calls at all the times. Like, I was reading articles about the Blues, right? I think the Blues are a pretty good team. Their mailbag, I read their article in The Athletic. It was a mailbag. It was full of, could we trade this guy? Could we trade that guy? Who could we trade? You know, they're already thinking. They're thinking about, hey, should we just tank? So they're going through the same things that Nashville is going through. The frustration of the fans. You know, should they rebuild? Would they be better off rebuilding? It's always looking at all of the options, right?
Sure.
When you're not achieving at the level that you want. This team is built to win this year. The Blues are built to win this year. You're trying to win. Now, everybody knows that when the Avalanche are at their best, nobody can probably match their full team. They're the team to beat. But you're trying to be in that group of teams that if you're the best version of yourself, you could make some noise in a playoff run. That's what you're trying. That's what this team is built for. There's no question about it. And so if it's not meeting that expectation, there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of tough meetings going on. There's a lot of fans going, why isn't it going well? What should they be doing? All that. That's really the challenge, right? Is getting through times like this so that at the end of the 82 game journey, your best version emerges, right? And you are the team that you're built.
But have we seen the best version of the Predators at any point this year?
No, I don't think so. I think they've underachieved. Uh-huh. I think they would tell you. They'd sit here, and if they ask any of them, have they met expectations? I don't think they believe that they have met expectations. I think they all believe that they've got to do better, that they must do better, or else, you know, not making the playoffs is below expectations, right?
Yeah.
You know, we could find another team in the standings. Let's just say the Red Wings.
Right.
The Red Wings have been a doormat for a long time. Now, how crazy is that to say, going back into history? They used to be the greatest, right? But they've gone through a long rebuild. They're getting tired of getting their butts kicked, and that's what's been happening the last 4 or 5 years. So if they were respectable but missed the playoffs this year, which is probably the most likely thing, they could at least at the end of the season say, all right, we're moving in the right direction. Our young guys are getting better. We didn't make the playoffs, but, you know, not a bad year. Next year, we'll get there. We got younger guys. That's not what the Predators want. That's not what the Blues want.
Yeah.
It's not what the Oilers want. You know, there's a lot of teams in that West that are built to get to the playoffs and win. So that's what's intriguing about the West, right? There's a couple teams at the bottom, like Arizona and Chicago. They're bad. They know they're going to be bad. They're going to be bad for a while. But there's about 11 or 12 teams that their expectation is to make the playoffs. They're trying to make it, and so there's going to be at the end of the year 3 or 4 teams that are very disappointed because they're making a run, they're trying to win, and it doesn't happen. So the Predators hope not to be one of those teams. They've got the first thing. And so I really challenge anybody by saying it's easy to make the playoffs. I do not think it's easy to make the playoffs in this league.
No, it's not. But the thing is, you want to make the playoffs for sure, but I think this fan base, where they're at, and you can compare this to the Titans and the Predators. They're tired of just getting there.
They want
to win. When you say that this team is built to win, you got to define what winning means.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup, the Super Bowl, they're hard to win. Not everybody gets to do it. Not everybody gets to do it every year. But you at least want to feel like that your team,
you have an opportunity,
is built to compete for it. And I would say right now, they're not. And like I said, I think they're an okay team.
Yep.
But they're not Stanley Cup caliber. They're not hanging in there with, you know, the – I mean, I say Colorado. Colorado's hurt, but I think once they get healthy, you're going to see them just climb their way back up. But
and there are teams that get totally derailed by injuries if you get enough of them. But because, like, it's like the – I think the Titans are sort of at that point where they've got so many guys out, it's like this isn't the same guys, right? They got the same uniform. But the Predators, I don't think – they haven't had – now, right now they're dealing with –
Serious injuries
in one department on D, but by and large for the season, I don't think they've been decimated by injuries. That, you know, the top guys have been out there. They're just, their production has got to be better. That's the challenge for those guys right now. So okay isn't what they're setting out to do.
There's a few questions that have come up on the show today that we now want to throw your way, Willie.
Absolutely.
And we
Fire
will
away.
Do one of those coming I up next. But first, you're going to talk about Lee Company.
All right, Lee Company will be sponsoring our coverage right here at Barrel House. Starting at 6 tonight, Max Hurst will have the pregame show. Get you ready for the Predators and the Oilers tonight. Two teams looking for W's here. Both came up with losses last night. Edmonton in regulation last night in Minnesota, 2-1. Nashville lost in overtime. They got a point but had to settle for one against the Blues. Lee Company also has all your needs taken care of in a lot of different areas. Home improvement is one. So if you're starting a home improvement project in 2023, keep Lee Company in mind. They can spearhead that operation for you. If you want to redo a bathroom, a kitchen, anything like that, they've got the team that can help you. 615-567-1000. But also remember, maintenance issues that you have at home or at work, and of course their baseline, heating, cooling, plumbing, and electric. They can help you with all those things at any time. Keep that phone number handy, 615-567-1000. Or go to LeeCompany.com.
Come over here. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, presented by Hair Club. Regrow your own natural hair through non-surgical options that deliver impressive results. Hair Club, love your hair, live your life. Hey, text right now, Preds fans. We want to win tickets to Section 102, our Game Changer section. Text the keyword Superbook, all one word, to the game text line, 615-737-1025, and you'll be entered to win. You can win with 1025-1063 The Game with Superbook, voted number one sportsbook app in Vegas. Download their app today. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Real quick, let's squeeze in this call on the Predators. Rob wants to talk about losing Tolvanen to Seattle. Rob, welcome in.
Yeah, thanks very much. And interesting that you got one GM that was on the hot seat in town and lost his job, and the other one that we talked very little about. Meanwhile, 2018, Eli Tolvanen, a number one draft pick for us, and quietly dismissed as a waiver wire pickup from Seattle. Not a lot of press around it, and I'm very curious as to how we did not have a lot of press around that, given the fact that there was so much hope. If you put Eli Tolvanen on the market 2 years ago, you probably would get a very serviceable forward for him. And it really, really gets down to the point, Boyle does not know how to address top-line forward talent in the draft, and I think it's time that we need to look at that GM. I think they fired the wrong GM, to be honest with you. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, Rob, appreciate it.
Is he wanting me to go back into the DeLorean here?
Yes, you're going to have to go
look,
back.
First of all,
his name is Eli Tolvanen. He's been here for 5 years, and it's not Eli Tolvanen. He's from Finland. His name is Eli Tolvanen. Okay, so if you're going to come on and be critical, you might want to know the guy's name.
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't mean to be getting on him because I know there's a lot of fans that are frustrated, and they have every right to be frustrated. I totally get it. And the fans want more. The fans are passionate. This is part of being a hockey market, right? And so they have every right to scrutinize every decision. And this is a big one. When you draft a guy in the first round, there's no question it's disappointing when he does not blossom. but they tried everything. They tried a lot of different things. I think they gave him a lot of opportunities. He played 135 games.
51 points, 25 goals, and 135 games. He was so drafted to be a goal scorer.
And I think he got a lot of opportunities to play in the top six. And when you draft a guy in the first round, you don't draft a guy to be a fourth liner.
Yeah.
Right? You draft that guy to score goals, to be a force. And it's a tough call. There's a lot that went into that decision. It wasn't in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a lot of layers to it. Most notably, it sort of things came to a head when you lost three guys in one day. You had sort of the perfect storm. You had two defensemen that got hurt on the same day where you're down to your eighth, ninth, and tenth defenseman. Okay, that's not something that's ideal. That's challenging to your roster. And on top of that, Michael McCarron entered the program, and there was no way to foresee that was going to happen. So these are all things that I think put challenges together, and you've got to make some tough decisions with your roster. And you've got a guy that's just sort of, you know, floating there, and he hasn't gone forward. You'd like to hold on to everybody, right? Sure. You'd like to be able to send anybody up and down to the minors anytime you want and just wait for it all to work out. But in the meantime, you're trying to win games.
It did
so
feel
everybody are they feeling pressure? Yeah, they all. These are tough, tough decisions, but the only thing I don't like is when people think that they haven't weighed all of the options. They've weighed all of these options. Like, people have gotten, and I think it's been awesome. Some of the guys, and Alex Doherty, Brian Baston, they have looked at all of the different options that were out there, but just know that they considered all of these options, right? And they had to make a tough call.
Yeah.
The salary cap's in there, how a guy's progressing, how are your prospects progressing in Milwaukee, the injury situation. All of these things are in the pool.
Sure.
But they are not losing right now because of Elie Tolvanen. It's just what we talked
about. He wasn't even playing.
Yes. Yeah. It's the guys at the top that have to start the drive. They have to drive the team.
And
that's the key.
This is my thing. And, Rob, appreciate your call. Appreciate your opinion. And I just said in the last segment, and I think that, you know, David Poile has sat right here at this desk and said the same thing, that this team's got to get to another level. They got to start scoring, whether it's the top six or the bottom six. Mm-hmm. They have no secondary scoring right now. They have to get all that. And Elie Tolvanen was drafted to be a goal scorer, and he simply was not. And to your point, they gave him every opportunity. Every opportunity. Now, I don't think they wanted to lose him at all. They wanted him to go back to Milwaukee, get some seasoning. Maybe that would get his confidence back and then bring him back up. But as you stated, it was – and I think the Rich Peverly comparison is a good one. They didn't want to lose Rich Peverly either, but they knew they had to free up a spot. Unfortunately, he got claimed, I think, Boston? I can't remember where he went right after here. Boston, I think. Or Atlanta. It was Atlanta
first.
It was Atlanta Thrashers.
Eventually, he got traded to Boston.
And had a nice career.
Oh, had a very good career. Yeah.
But won a Stanley Cup. But
Look, I think you can go back. The Predators have found guys off the waiver wire.
Sure.
And done really well for them. So it works both ways. We're talking about a long history here. Elie Tolvanen could go to Seattle and do really, really well. And I think, I just listened to Roman Josi downstairs talking about it. I think in some ways they'd be happy for Elie Tolvanen. They like Elie Tolvanen as a person. You can't explain sometimes why things don't work. The guy's saying, hey, they should have traded him a couple years ago. Well, hindsight's 20/20. We can't go back in the time machine.
Like, look,
right?
It's hard.
And I do think they probably at some point vetted, what is the trade market for Elie Tolvanen at different times, right? Maybe they passed on an opportunity a couple years ago. Maybe
they didn't want to give
maybe
up on
they
it.
Didn't
they wanted
have,
to see what happened.
Sure. And these are the things. It's not easy.
No,
to do
and,
this.
And look, the hard part is there are times where you got to know when to walk away. That you got to know when to walk away from the table. Mm-hmm. Personally, I kind of felt like Elie was given, and I like Elie. I think he was given every opportunity, and it just hasn't worked. And this could be a Fiala situation where he goes and he thrives somewhere else. It could be Peverly. It could be John Blum, where you never hear from him again. Who knows? We don't know.
John Blum.
You like that? You went deep in the bag.
But that's the part of doing business, and that's a part of trying to build a team. So, but appreciate the call. Appreciate the conversation. You missed a spirited conversation earlier today that we will get into coming up next. It's Chase Willie D-Mace. We're live at Bridgestone Arena here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.